What's up, everyone? Welcome to a brand new podcast about fly fishing. I'm your host, Jeff Jones, and this is a look, man. If you listen to me on my other podcast, Brackish Coast, well, this one is all about fly fishing, the brackish fly. We're going to dive deep into all things fly fishing, techniques, tips, tricks. We're going to be talking to people about locations. Already got guests lined up from all over the United States. You guys are going to love it. Absolutely. It's insane how many people we've already got lined up for this thing and already even recorded. So stay tuned. This is the Brackish Fly, where the content is fresh and the dialogue is salty. All right, so before we really start with what's going on today, I want to tell you about the content schedule that we're coming out here with at the Brackish Fly. So this podcast is going to be, you know, pretty much wherever you consume podcasts. And if there's an avenue or a host that you want us to check out, let me know. And I'll be glad to, you know, try to work that out to get it in new places. But so far, recording on Anchor, we're in the Google podcast. I don't even know what it's called, Google Cast or something. I don't think it's Google Cast, but something. And then iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all of those. Okay, we're going to be pretty much everywhere on the podcast. And these episodes are going to be coming out every other Friday. Every other Friday. All right, and the weeks that there's not a podcast, this is what's cool. The Brackish Fly family of content is going to have a YouTube episode airing on the alternate Fridays. So say you're listening to this on, you know, you listen to it the day it comes out on Friday. Well, next Friday, check out the YouTube page and we're going to be uploading a video. You know, it might be fly fishing, might be talking about my gear, or it might be talking fly tying, you know, never know, but it's all going to be fly fishing centric. We're even going to dive a little kind of deep into different species and got some pretty cool stuff planned about, you know, a little bit of species biology. I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to fish. I know a lot of species and I know a lot about them. So I want to try to share that knowledge with you guys. And this podcast, look, I don't want it just to be entertainment. I want it to be entertaining, but I want you to learn something, but I also want to inspire you to do something. And that something may be, you know, tying a certain fly, you know, going out on an adventure by yourself and catching a certain species of fish, or just trying for, you know, whatever. I'm sitting here rambling and I don't want to do that, but that's kind of the content, you know, schedule, how we're going to do it. Every other Friday, a podcast, and every other Friday, a YouTube video, but every single Friday, there's going to be something coming out. So if that makes sense. All right. So today I'm not going to have a guest. This is the first episode of the Brackish Fly. I'm just going to tell you about myself and how I got into fly fishing, why I fly fish, and what I like about fly fishing. A little bit of my gear, my favorite gear right now, that sort of thing. All right, so straight up, I'm Jeff Jones. And I probably said that 3 or 4 times in this podcast, and I feel like I'm kind of rambling. I'm actually just riding around on the road right now, following my dad. He was down at the bayou getting a bush hog for his tractor. We got some property on the bayou, and he had bush hog it there. The bush hog tore up. We had to leave it there, and we're just now getting back to get the bush hog. Anyway, I'm following him around, and he's got like 3 more miles to go, so I got plenty of time. So if you hear blinker or road noise or horns blowing or anything like that, well, just kind of excuse it. I'm recording when I can, and if the audio is not perfect, I'm sorry, guys. I want to get this content out, and I want it to be, you know, on a schedule. So it might not be the best quality, but I want to get it out. And if you got tips on improving quality for someone who is extremely busy, please let me know. But anyway, so I started out, I was a pastor's kid in Alabama. That's where I grew up, was in Gilbertown, Alabama. And if you've ever seen that on a map, you've got a really good map, because that is just a 1 red light, 2 stop sign town. I mean, there's nothing there. It's close to the Tombigbee River. So one thing that we used to do as kids was we would go jugging for catfish on the Tombigbee and set lines. And we done a lot of catfishing when I was a kid. My dad was a pastor, so we got to go to some people's ponds and fish. And you know, a few things like that. But we hunted a lot as well. So I grew up in the outdoors. I grew up learning how to fish, learning how to hunt, and provide for our family. You know, we ate whatever we caught or whatever we shot, you know. That was just kind of our thing. And we didn't just rape the resources like a lot of people you see do. I mean, we were responsible. We stayed within limits. And more times than not, we didn't even go to the limit. We kept what we planned on eating. And that was instilled in me very early. And I mean, like pre-teenager years, I was, you know, this is what we're eating. We're not keeping any more than this. If you're going to kill something, if you're going to harvest it, you're going to eat it. You know, no waste. That was something we were taught, me and my two brothers. I got two older brothers. And that was taught to us from a very early age. Well, after my dad resigned the church in Gilbertown, we moved down to Moss Point, Mississippi, where the rest of my family was. My grandparents were raised, both sides actually, and my parents were raised. And down here is right on the coast. It's right on the Alabama-Mississippi line. So I'm close to Mobile Bay, close to that Mobile Bay drainage, but right on Bayou Cumbus is where we was born and raised. And that's kind of what I consider my home water. But right north of Bayou Cumbus and right north of the bayou here is Escatawba River, or Dog River, as we call it. Escatawba is an Indian word that means dog. So we was kind of raised, you know, fishing brackish water, fishing rivers, fishing salt water. And I love it. I love the diversity of species when you come to a coastline that has fresh and salt water, you know, the brackish coast, as we call it on our other podcast. And so we just swapped up. Every time went fishing, we were doing something different, it seemed like. One day we'd go for speckled trout, and the next day we'd go for bass or, you know, panfish or whatever. But my dad, when we were young, he taught me how to fly fish, and man, he just hit a hole in the road and just bounced that tractor crazy. Anyway, he taught us how to fly fish at a very early age, and we weren't doing anything spectacular. We didn't have great gear. We had pretty much Walmart special rods, you know, cheap gear, and we were just slinging poppers for panfish and the occasional bass, and we loved it. We just done it basically for fun, and I don't even know what weight rod I was using at that time. Maybe a 4-weight, but it was like a 7-foot rod, 4-weight maybe. And the line was old, and it was a hand-me-down rod. But we were using these little poppers. We didn't really know a whole lot about fly fishing, and that was a very early age. That was my first exposure to fly fishing. And then from there, my middle brother, Kenny, he got kind of caught up in the bass fishing tournament scene. And that kind of changed the way I fished. I went ahead and, you know, done the Kevin Van Dam stuff, got all the bait casters and rods and different things. And, you know, we went bass fishing. And my brother and I, we would fish tournaments occasionally together. And that was just something we'd done. So I shifted gears and went straight tournament bass guy. And occasionally I would still slip off in the salt. But I hadn't got into the artificial game in fishing yet. I was still using cut bait and live bait and stuff like that. Well, fast forward to several years later, I'm, you know, in my 20s now, and I'm chasing girls. Well, actually in my late teenage years, I'm chasing girls, and kind of fishing gets put on the back burner. And I met my wife, we dated, got married. I said that backwards. I met my wife. I met the girl that was going to be my wife. But met her. We dated. Got married, obviously. Had a couple kids. And then I started getting into wanting to build fishing rods. So I done that for a little while. Called it Crazy Fish Custom Rods. But then I realized that, you know, if you're going to work in the fishing industry like that, you don't have time to go fishing. So I kind of gave that up. Just to fish. I love fishing, and that's when I got a kayak. I attribute my kayak exposure to my oldest brother, David, his late wife, Amber. She had a kayak whenever they got married, and always was talking about how fun it was. So we all decided to go kayaking together, and I loved it and came home that same weekend and bought a kayak for myself. Now, it was a cheap kayak, like a $200 kayak that had like a 250-pound weight capacity, and I was pushing it with all my gear, and my butt got wet in that kayak every time I went out. It just never failed. I was getting wet in it, but I loved every second of it. And I kept going, kept getting a little deeper in the kayak world, and finally started a YouTube channel and started filming some adventures. And actually, some of my first videos are with that very first kayak I had, that Pelican. And you could tell just how novice I was at all of that. But from there, I just kept getting deeper into the kayak fishing world and loved every minute. And I was looking for a new challenge. So I stepped up into artificial game and got really big into just catching fish on artificial lures. And that worked great. I loved every second of it. I dove deep into it. I mean, I went overboard. I've got so much tackle right now. It's insane. Well, through all of that, I was learning, you know, with the YouTube channel, I was getting a couple sponsors here and there on board that believed in what I was doing and, you know, just wanted to help me out. And of course I wanted to help them out. It was all gear I was already using anyway. So it was just natural progression for a sponsorship. And from there, it's just, I'm not saying fishing with conventional gear just got easy, but I wanted a more intimate experience fishing. And I've been, you know, on Facebook, you see all these beautiful images of fish, and I've got these friends that are fly fishing. And it's just a totally immersed into fishing is what it looked like from the outside. If you're fly fishing, you know, I see these guys and they're just totally zoned in, like the fly. It's just a beautiful art form. And it looked nothing like it did when I was a kid, when I was exposed to it. I mean, we were just slinging poppers, you know, maybe 15 feet. So it wasn't a very artful experience then. But then, and let me back up just a hair. My wife is actually the children's director at our church. So they sent her, or they were going to send her on a trip to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, to a children's conference. For our children's leaders conference or something like that, to kind of, you know, grow her knowledge in that so she could be better. She goes on to a conference once a year with that. Well, I decided to take off of work. I worked for myself. I decided to take off work, and I had some goals that year to catch, I don't remember how many species it was. It was the beginning of 2020, but I've got goals and I want to catch all these different species. And I've, you know, like I said at the intro, I really, really intrigued by different species of fish, and I've never caught a brook trout. So given the opportunity to go to Gatlinburg, you know, basically on our church's dime, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, like they really take care of my wife and myself and stuff like that, but going on their dime and just kind of relaxing, you know, walking through these streams and fishing, I thought was a great idea. So I got to doing some research and come to find out, you know, I pretty much could catch them on, you know, conventional gear, spinning gear or whatever. But everyone I talked to, everyone I read stories and the research I'd done was like, you got to do it on a fly rod, like a 3-weight fly rod. It's the total experience. And I was like, yep, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it with a fly rod, and I want to catch brook trout, and I want to catch rainbow trout, brown trout, whatever, you know. I wanted to do it all, and I wanted to do it with a fly rod. I wanted that total experience. So I went to Bass Pro Shop and bought a 3-weight fiberglass rod. Like, the rod's like $60 or something, and I bought a reel, like $20 reel, and some line to go on it. And I get up there. I have no idea what I'm doing. But all this research kind of paid off. I got this, some indicators, some like stick on indicators and some midges, like some zebra midges and like some little bitty nymphs. That's all my research, you know, told me to use. And I didn't talk to any fly shops up there. I went against all of that wealth of, you know, information, you know, hey, you need to go check this fly shop out. They'll tell you what's going on. I wanted to try to do it all myself. And so I, you know, blue lining on a map, pick Google Maps up, find a place. I go there, and I'm like, man, this water is insane. I don't even know what I'm going to do here. I didn't know really where the trout would hold, but I just kind of hit and miss. I was just kind of trial and error and just fishing. Well, it took me about an hour before I got my first bite, and it was this little waterfall coming off. It's in LeConte Creek in a national forest, but I can't remember the name of the national forest now. It's in Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge. Great Smoky Mountain National Park. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But I'm in there in LeConte Creek, and I'm, you know, casting, and there's this little waterfall coming down into a little, like a pool. It's about 2 feet deep, and there's rocks all around, and then it goes off into another waterfall, maybe 20 feet down from the first one. And I'm casting behind this water, you know, to this waterfall. There's a rock right there by it where the water comes around. And my indicator rig, it's moving fast. I've got an indicator and two rubber legs nymph and a zebra midge on the bottom of that. And, you know, the indicator's coming around and the indicator just shoots under. And I'm like, oh. And so I try to set the hook like bass style. And I just rip it out of the fish's mouth. And I was like, I just got nailed. And it just lit a fire under me. And I'm like, I've got to catch this fish. I've got to. So I check my rig, you know, everything's good. There's no grass, there's no whatever on it. Then I throw it back in there, nothing. I throw it back in there, nothing. I keep throwing, nothing. Well, I'm totally, the whole time getting like hung up on limbs and stuff because I'm trying to fly cast, you know, in like the jungle, basically, man, there's trees everywhere. And it's in the middle of January. It's like January 20th, 2020. So, and I'm casting in there. It's a Little Bee Creek. It's freezing cold. I've got my waders on. They're not insulated. And there was snow earlier that week. And so there's still some snow on the ground and the water's cold. And it's terrible. Like I'm freezing to death. My toes are numb. My feet are numb. I'm getting numb in the knees. And I'm just like, I've got to catch this fish. My wife calls me. She's like, or she texts me. And she's like, hey, the conference is just about over. You want to go eat some lunch? Sure. So I don't have much time. I'm like, I've got to make this happen. So I got to looking at all the specifics of where I caught, you know, where I got that bite, right under a waterfall, right on the backside of a rock, on the lee side of a rock. So I found another similar place, dropped the indicator rig right above the rock, let it come down. When it got to the side of the rock, boom, it went under. This time I held the line and set the hook softly, and oh boy, it was on. And I was like, I've got a fish. And this fish starts running and running, and it runs down another waterfall. I'm like, oh, God, I've got to catch this fish. It goes around a rock. And I've got a three-weight rod that's 5'6", or I think it's a 5'6", three-weight. Got this rod. Finally, I get the fish right beside me, and it's like a 10-inch rainbow, a wild rainbow. I took pictures of it. You can find those pictures on my Facebook page. I'm telling you. It was amazing. That experience, actually catching that fish straight up by myself, no help except for like internet research and all that. That was such a gratifying experience. Well, I went and ate lunch with my wife. I'm like super pumped. I mean, that had basically made my month to actually catch that rainbow trout all on my own. It wasn't big, but it was a beautiful, beautiful fish. And it absolutely sparked a fire in me. From there, I went to a tackle shop or fly shop, you know, told him everything I was doing. They're like, man, that's awesome that you caught one without any help. And he was like, I haven't been using those flies, but I'll show you what I've been using. So he shows me everything he's been using. And I buy some flies and found out that the little the indicator rig that I was using, the nymphs were too close and it was actually illegal. So I had to spread my nymphs out. And so anyway, the next day it's like pouring down rain, and the guy had given, you know, the guy at the fly shop, he'd give me some great locations. It's pouring down rain. I'm like, I'm still doing this. I'm doing it. I get out there and the water is a lot higher than it was the day before. Well, not wanting to be a pansy or whatnot, I just went in and done it. I got in the water. I start wading around. I find some places. I get a few hits, no hookups, but finally, and this is maybe an hour into it, it's pouring down rain still. I get a hit, set the hook, and it's a brook trout, like a 4 or 5 inch brook trout, really small. As I like grab my hat to scoop it up as a net this Joker like comes off the hook, goes into like this little pocket that's surrounded by rocks. I'm like, oh, he's in there. He's trapped. I'm going to get him. I reach down. I touch the fish. I actually touch the fish. And then he squirms out of my hand and into the water. So technically, I guess you could say I caught a brook trout, but I didn't get it to hand. I touched it. I actually nearly landed it, but didn't quite. I wasn't able to get a picture of it. Wasn't able to hold it. So it was a little disappointing, but the whole time the water's rising and finally, like, it's just so muddy. I've got to get out of there. It's pouring down rain. I'm wet. I'm about to catch hypothermia. So I leave. After that, I'm elated. I can't wait to come down to the coast and catch fish on something bigger. But I got to get a better rod. I got to get a bigger rod than a 3-weight. All right, and that's coming up in the next segment. But for now, check out this. So you heard how I kind of got into fly fishing and, you know, my first kind of experience with it in 2020. Now I'm headed back to the coast. I'm trying to, you know, see how I'm going to implement all this fly fishing strategy into my saltwater and freshwater game down home in South Mississippi and in South Alabama. And you know, obviously, I've got to have a bigger rod than a 3-weight. Sure, it's good for panfish and whatnot, but I want to catch big fish. I want to catch redfish, speckled trout, tarpon, and for sure a flounder. So I do some research, and I love it so much. I just bite the bullet and got an H3, a Helios 3 from Orvis, and I got the 8-weight, the 9-foot 8-weight. And, oh my goodness, let me tell you, that rod is insane. It's so good. Even being, you know, just a beginner, I got out in the field the first time I got it and was nearly cast into the backing. And that's pretty impressive, honestly. So, anyway, less about the rod. I'm, you know, getting into fishing. So, I start tying a few flies, and I get it kind of dialed in to where I'm catching a few specks, a few bass, and here and there redfish. And you know, some of the fish I've been catching, especially the bass, the 8-weight is just a little bit overpowered. So I get looking around some of the tackle stores. I'm like, man, I need something smaller. I need maybe a 6-weight, 5 or 6-weight. And I found at Helios 2 at McCoy Outdoors in Mobile, and I found this thing on clearance sale. They've had it for a couple years, you know, since it was pretty much new, and I bought a Helios 2 to complement my collection of fly rods, and that is what I'm using a lot for specs. Even some redfish, but some of them's a little overpowering to a 6-weight, but so I'm in this little bayou, and, you know, I've been catching micro tarpon, you know, four pound fish at the max with a spinning rod. And I'm taking my buddy, like, I took Matt Therrell, the co-host of the Brackish Coast podcast, if you've listened to it. Man, he's never caught a tarpon, so I'm like, man, we've got to go catch some tarpon. So I take him. And we got into a school of tarpon. It was absolutely unbelievable how many tarpon there were around us. I'd already caught a couple of them on a spinning rod that day. And I was like, I've got to catch a tarpon on a fly rod. I just cannot stand it. So I cast, I was with the 6-weight, and I cast the first fly into the school of tarpon. And before I even, like, get a chance to do anything, like, as soon as the fly hits the water, one just smashes it. And I set the hook, and when I set the hook, the line breaks, and I'm like, I have got to change my stinking tippet, because I think I was using a 0X tippet, which is still pretty big, but these tarpon have some pretty sharp mouth, and I've been using 15-pound fluoro on a spinning rod for a leader. So I whip it up real quick, and I put just a little shock leader, maybe 12 inches of 15-pound fluoro, and tie the exact same fly on, And the school of tarpon now is moving up this little creek. So we kind of follow them, start following them, and they're moving fast. You know, we're trying to catch up with them, but we're just watching them roll, and they're just going all over the place, but they're moving up the creek. And I start seeing one roll coming towards me, kind of away from the group. And I'm like, man, that's a nice-looking tarpon. It looks bigger than the others. I cast with 6 weight, and nothing. You know, I'm right there where you're old, nothing. So I start stripping it, nothing. Finally, I see the tarpon coming. The water's kind of clear, and I see him running towards the fly. And at this point, it's right in front of my kayak. My leader is actually touching the tip guide and fixing to come on. So my fly line is actually inside. Literally, this tarpon on the 6 weight hits the fly maybe a foot and a half off the front of my kayak with maybe 3 foot of line out of the tip of the rod. He hits it, and I strip set, and he goes nuts. He tail walks right in front of me, soaks me down, and then he takes this bulldog run under my kayak. My fly rod's bent over, like it's bent all the way down into the water. I grab my paddle, twist my kayak around, and I holler at Matt. I'm like, dude, come over here. He starts heading my way, and this tarpon is tail walking again. And it's just an unbelievable experience. And this is a much bigger tarpon than I've been fighting and I've been catching with spinner rod. You know, told you the max is probably 4 pounds or so. This one has to be a good 10 or 12 pounds. It's a big tarpon. It's over 30 inches easily. And he fights, he bulldogs, he's just peeling line off of the reel. Finally gets close to the backing, and I just can't slow him down on this 6 weight. And he's just making this drag screaming run. Matt's like all excited. He's hollering. I'm excited. I'm pumped. I'm hollering. And then he just comes loose. And I was like, oh, it felt so good. It was such a cool experience. The tarpon got away, but it was literally the best fight I've ever had on a fly rod. And I don't think I ever picked up the spinning rod again for the rest of maybe 6 weeks after that. It was all fly rod all the time. I was slinging flies for tarpon, for redfish, for bass, for specks. I tried for flounder. I got a hook in my ear, straight through my ear. I've got a hook in my arm. Man, I've been hooked so many times since I started fly fishing. It's nuts. I probably should wear like a bubble wrap or something when I go fly fishing, but it is what it is. It's part of the game. I enjoy it. I absolutely love fly fishing. It's amazing. I'm really, really glad that I started this journey and I started fly fishing. So that is kind of my story and where I'm at for 2021. When I'm actually recording this podcast, I'm keeping up with all of the species I catch, and so far, it's pretty early into the month, and I've caught 4 species, and I've caught 3 species on fly. So, 3 of the 4 species I've caught have been on fly, and I want to keep kind of that ratio going forward. And I know some species just aren't going to work on fly. Some of the dead bait species that I'm catching and whatnot probably won't work on fly, but I want to keep about 75% of my fish that I catch this year. I want them to be on fly rod. And my goal is to catch 48 individual species of fish and 2 fish per day collectively throughout the year. So not necessarily, you know, I have to fish or I have to catch 2 fish every single day, but 2 fish representing each day of the year. So at the end of the year, 730 fish or whatever the math is. Right off the top of my head, I'm not sure what it is, but around that number. And I think I'm approaching 30 fish so far, close to the beginning of the month. Most of them are panfish species. I've caught redfish, I'm sorry. I've caught red spotted sunfish, red ear sunfish, bluegill sunfish, and those are the three that I've caught on fly. And I caught a redfish on conventional gear out on a photo shoot a few days ago. So that's kind of my goals this year. And I want to fish in six states. Already got a couple lined up. Already fished in Mississippi. Already fished in Alabama. So I got two states already done in the first week of January. And probably going to hit Tennessee, Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, Florida. That's just kind of the ones in my region. Those are the ones I'm wanting to hit this year for sure. And that might even be more than six, but my goal is six. So anyway, well, that's my story. I hope you like it. I just wanted to give you kind of a background of me and how I started fly fishing, my fly fishing now that I do. And before we go into the rest of the series, now next week, we're actually going to have JD DeRozier's. Not next week, 2 weeks from now, or well, depending on how you listen to this, 2 weeks from now, I'm going to be releasing a podcast, with JD DeRozier's. He's going to be my guest. I've already shot that or recorded that episode. It's great. He talks fly fishing. He lives up in South Carolina. And after that, I've got, Spencer Higa, from Utah. And we talk a lot about cutthroat trout in that episode. So you're not going to want to miss these episodes, man. There's a lot of knowledge bombs getting dropped just from my guest. I'm learning as I go, and I'll share any information I've got, flies, everything. I'll share it all. So be sure to follow the podcast, subscribe, give us a rating. Please give us a rating. Even if you hate it, give it a 1-star. It really does help just to have ratings. Share it on social media. Send me a message on social media. You can follow me on Facebook, Jeff Jones. I'm the dude holding a flounder. I probably won't change that profile pic for a long time. So I'm just the dude holding a flounder. It looks like a massive, like, doormat flounder. It really wasn't. It was only like a 5-pound flounder. But on the picture, it looks 10 or 12 pounds. It looks massive. It was a camera trick that I didn't intend to do. But the flounder looks huge. So follow me on Facebook, and I'll see you guys later. I've been Jeff. Good vibes, tight lines. God bless. This has been the Braggish Fly. Content's fresh. The dialogue is salty.